hello everyone. Welcome to Lost Rhetoric, a dim space for light hearts where we discuss all manner of odd. My name is Jason Dinges. I am your host. Thank you for joining me. Last episode, I got into a really, really good discussion with my friend Mustin Douche, also known as Justin Stimson from the band Nasal Rod and Mark and the Horse Jerks and Mr. Frederick and a whole bunch of other shit. We had a really great conversation about whether or not we live in a simulation. So if that's something that piques your interest, go back, listen to episode 61. That was a very good time. This week, Johnny Brook from the band Coffin Apartment joins me. We are going to be talking about Coral Castle down there in Florida. So stick around for that. So this week, no Call Me Crazy segment. I kind of couldn't find anyone. Well, that's not true. I had someone booked, but we didn't get around to recording it in time. And I don't really feel like waiting. So I'm just not going to do it this week. And, you know, that segment, I love it. But I basically got to book two guests a week now, which is kind of fucking stupid on my part. Because, you know, it's hard enough getting one, right? But sorry. No Call Me Crazy this week. But I am going to talk about the music I'm listening to. Let's get into that. The first thing I've been listening to is a band called Melissa from New York City. They are awesome. Somebody posted some video of them playing, and I was hooked immediately. It's really, I don't want to use the word catchy, but it's catchy to me. It's just really awesome kind of death punk. You know, I mentioned the album Archaic by Rudimentary Peni before, about how it's just killer riff after killer riff, and just hard. It's just hard as nails. And they have a lot of that going on. It's just killer riff after killer riff, and the vocals are very black metal, honestly. Just black metal vocalist in a death punk band, essentially, and I fucking love it. I love it. I'll post a link to their Bandcamp. You should check Melissa out. The next thing I've been listening to, totally different end of the spectrum here. Orville Peck has a new album coming out called Bronco. And he's doing what everyone seems to be doing. Releasing it in segments. So he just released the first four songs. Bronco, Chapter 1. So I've only heard these four songs. And they're great. He doesn't miss. I don't think he misses. He's really good. So check out the first installment of the new Orville Peck album, Bronco. I'm assuming next week there'll be three or four more songs, and the week after the whole record will be released or some shit. I've talked about him before. Always great. And the last band I've been listening to, and I'm late to the party on this one, and intentionally, again, I just blew this band off forever, but the Gaslight Anthem, I somehow came across someone touting the greatness of their album, The 59 Sound, from back in 2009, and I always just kind of blew them off as I just kind of figured they'd be some like shitty emo band or something, like new wave emo shit. I had no idea what this band was about. But they're good. They're just like melodic rock and roll. They remind me of some good Portland bands, honestly. I haven't listened to a shit ton of their stuff, so I don't know if they're like actually a good band, but I like what I've heard on this record. I'm about 12 years late to the party, but hey, good music's good music, and it gets me through the day, right? And hopefully you check it out if you haven't already listened to the Gaslight Anthem. I think this is a really popular album, so maybe you've heard it. Other than that, I've been listening to a bunch of podcasts. I have a brand new job where I work basically, not by myself, but I listen to podcasts all day on my shift. And I've just been blowing through these, a lot of like, you know, cool investigative reporting style. There's one called The Agent that I listened to about a KGB agent living in America. That was really good. There's a show called The Opportunist that has like two or three seasons out. That's really good. Alligator Candy. It was a murder, child murder, and the little brother of the person, the little boy that got murdered in the 70s, talks about that and is, you know, tells his story. Sports Wars, I've been listening to, is just a guy telling crazy sports rivalries. The Yellow Car, which is an investigative podcast, actually from up in Vancouver, Washington, just outside of Portland, was kind of a whodunit, what's the deal with this murder of this lady. And yeah, that's essentially what I've been listening to for the most part. And that's it. That's what I've been listening to. So yeah, tonight Johnny and I are going to talk Coral Castle. And I know this is, you know, it's been talked about a lot before, but we did have a really good discussion and it was really, really fun. And I hope you like it. Today is Super Bowl Sunday. I don't know who's going to win. The game has not been played, but by the time you hear this, the game will be over. I don't know who you're rooting for. I'm rooting for no one. It's going to be a good game. That's all I'm looking forward to, is sitting down, drinking and eating pizza and chips and just being a fucking slob on a Sunday watching football. That's what I'm going to do after I get done recording this. So I hope the game was good and the results favor whoever, you know, isn't an asshole in real life. You know, I hope a bunch of it makes the results make a lot of people happy, and it's going to anger a lot of people as well, because that's the nature of the game. But just don't be a dick about it if your team loses, you know? Just don't do that, right? Right. Okay. Let's talk shop real quick. Go to LostRhetoric.com. Hit the shop. Buy some stuff. Buy some merchandise off of me. I would love if you did that. Shirts, koozies, mugs, pins, stickers, all that stuff. And, you know, rate, review, follow, subscribe, hit the like button, do all of that stuff. Anywhere you can, whatever platform you listen on, if there's any way to give a 5-star or just a thumbs up, please do that. I would greatly appreciate that. And contact me. Follow me on Instagram, Lost Rhetoric Podcast. Twitter, Lost_Rhetoric. And you can just email me, old-fashioned style, LostRhetoricPodcast@gmail.com. Okay, I think that's it, everyone. I think that's it. Let's get into this conversation with me and Johnny. Here we go. Johnny. Oh, I can hear you, Johnny.
What?
I can hear you now.
Oh, you can hear me. Okay, that's great. the thing was like, oh, we need to restart your computer and Zoom needs help. I was like, oh no.
Oh, well,
good.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Thanks. I'm glad. Yeah, no worries. Fuck, man. I'm coming out of a haze. I just took a nap.
Ooh.
And at my young/old age, it feels so good. I was just thinking in my 20s and like early 30s, naps were just not an option. I don't care how tired I was, how much sleep I didn't get, what I had to do. Naps were not an option.
I'm not a nap guy. I cannot do naps. And part of it is just because I wake up with this really panicky feeling that I've like missed out on something.
Dude, I think that was part of my problem when I was younger. It's just, I was just, my brain wouldn't shut off about, I mean, something like it, whatever. I don't know. I just couldn't take naps because I was just like on fire the whole time.
Yeah. Well, but then I think what's funny is as I get older, naps become more of an option, but actually sleeping at night is suddenly more difficult, you know?
Oh yeah. I've gotten better at all that stuff. As soon as I get horizontal, I'm asleep nowadays and it's fucking great. I thought the day would never come. And that being said, this episode is brought to you by Sleep Number Beds. Sleep Number, what's your sleep number? Or how does that work?
I have no idea. I've never slept on anything but a mattress on the floor. Well, I do have, but I've boxed in, but.
You know, what's funny is my son already has a full size bed. I'm not kidding. He's awesome. 3 and he has a fucking bed frame and a full size mattress. And I did not have that until, I mean, in a frame, not on the floor. I didn't have that until like my mid 20s or something.
Yeah. That's
maybe late 20s.
That's a big step. Early.
Yeah, he's it's nowhere but down for him. But anyway, enough about sleep. This is probably putting people to sleep. How you doing, Johnny? I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad to be here. Do you get nervous for these? I mean, it sounds like you just took a nap, so maybe you don't.
I don't get nervous because no one's listening right now.
Did you get nervous on? Do you get nervous on stage? You have stage fright.
You know what's funny? I used to. I wouldn't necessarily call it fright, especially when I was playing drums. I had more fright because I would fuck up a lot. And you know, when I started playing guitar, I was a little less nervous about it because it was all distortion anyway. And if I fucked up and it was so fast, who gave a shit?
Right.
But that went away too. It's just like the naps. Like when I was younger, I was a little bit more nervous about everything. And then I played so many fucking shows and just got to the point where I don't care. Sometimes if we played a bigger place, I'd feel get a little butterflies, but then once you start, it's just whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So no, I mean, I haven't played in so long. I probably would be nervous. Who knows?
Yeah. I get nervous every time ever, no matter what.
Well, you do such an excellent job. I could never tell.
Thanks. Yeah. I think it's just part of it might have a reason that I'm still doing it is I just, I'm a glutton for it, but any public, it was just funny because I'm a bartender, a musician, and I get nervous in both arenas, you know, if it's
very public life.
Yeah. Public life. But I must love it on some level, but
I think it's a thing. A lot of famous musicians, you know, have stage fright, like the guy from Def Leppard, rest in peace. Their one guitarist that ended up committing suicide, I believe, somehow he would try to like break his fingers on the sink and shit, so he wouldn't have to go on stage. Yeah. He was like a wreck. And I'm listening to Cocaine and Rhinestones right now. And the whole season two is about George Jones. And George Jones is like probably the biggest country star, arguably top three of all time. And he has crazy stage fright. Like he doesn't want to be in public at all.
That's so wild.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't get nervous for this really because fuck it, right? I mean, if you go back and listen to the first episode, I'm obviously nervous in a sense that, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know the format and I admitted it. I was like, I'm just trying to fucking shake off the newbie cobwebs here. But right. Now it's so whatever. This is my 62nd episode.
Yeah.
And
it's a big deal.
And I honestly, I'm going to let you in on a secret, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
I prepare less than I used to on purpose.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. They do, the conversations really flow. I really like this podcast. So when you asked me, I was like, oh, hell, love to.
Thank you. Yeah, because I the first 10, 12, 15 episodes, I used to over prepare to my detriment to the point where like the conversation was not very good because it was very obvious. I was trying to like put in every single fucking tidbit of information that I had researched.
Right.
And because I just wanted it to all get out there, but the conversation suffered. And I could tell. I think Grace Bigler was the first guest that kind of pointed that out, like not in a negative way, but it's just like, yeah, you know. And then there were a couple, like multiple guests that would be like, oh, do you want to talk about this now? Oh, do you want to talk about that? Oh, you don't want to talk about that now. I'm like,
right.
People should come out of people's mouths, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I'm controlling the conversation too much.
Yeah, it's got to be a weird thing to like, a weird thing to work on. I mean, it's got to be weird to hear your voice back too. The only other podcast I ever did was Hot Garbage. Do you know those guys?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I know them, but I know what you're talking about. Like Hot, like Hout.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And me and Jesse got so fucked up that I like, couldn't listen to it. I was like, I listened to like 15 minutes, like, holy shit. Because I was nervous, you know, because I was like, we would like get together and we had microphones and stuff. I was so nervous and Twisted Tea was coming out. I remember Naylor was drinking that stuff a lot. So we were like Twisted Tea and they were passing blunts and I just got wrecked in the podcast. It was fucking embarrassing. So that was like the last, this is kind of my like retribution. I'm like, okay.
All right.
Talking about not fucked up.
Well, great. So far, so good. I'm keeping all this in. This is all making the final edit, which is great. The final edit is nothing. I take out the stop button click at the end, and that's my editing.
Sweet.
But tonight we are here to talk Coral Castle, are we not?
Yes, indeedy.
And I have been intentionally avoiding this one for a while because it's pretty well-worn territory. Like, I've listened to a few episodes of Coast to Coast back in the day on this, and it's an amazing, I don't know, cool story. But you know, I don't, whatever, there's nothing new under the sun, right, John?
Right.
I
mean, right.
But I haven't talked about it, so I figured it was time to talk about it. And yeah, so for those who don't know what Coral Castle is, do you got any, a little bit, quick lesson on it?
Yeah, so the Coral Castle is this guy, like a Latvian immigrant. What's his name? Ed Leedskalnin
or something? Edward Leedskalnin.
Leedskalnin. He, according to the you know, their website or the legend behind it, he's 26. Mm-hmm. He's about to marry this 16-year-old girl, and the 16-year-old girl, day before the wedding, cancels it, and he's heartbroken and moves to America, somewhere in Florida, not the initial, not where it is right now, but so he moves somewhere in Florida,
right, and
builds by himself at night this gigantic limestone structure. It's like a
limestone, also known as coral.
Right. So yeah,
that's one of the misleading things about it. It's not actual coral rock, coral reef rock. It's what is it? Oolite
limestone. And I kind of wanted to. I didn't look into this, but I was wondering if oolite limestone has some sort of significance elsewhere. You know, in other. I don't know, ceremonial or supernatural, is oolite limestone. Maybe this is homework for the listeners, but look into whether oolite limestone has any sort of supernatural tendencies in it historically, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. It is. Yeah, I never really thought about that.
I got a lot of theories. I got a lot of weird theories about this story because it's a weird fucking story.
All you rock and gem people out there, if anyone's got an idea or knows anything about oolite limestone, yeah, because he's got a lot of it. That's another thing. There's a lot of, because this is, I imagine this place, just by looking at the pictures, is not massive, right? Like, he had a big property, but I'm assuming the area that he built in is probably pretty small, you know?
Yeah.
But he did a lot. He sculpted out of the rock, made all these structures, even made a living quarters and put up a whole 8-foot wall. It was like 8 foot by 4 foot by 3 foot panels, basically, of this stuff. And it's just like, where'd he get it?
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, there's obviously some skeptical stuff out there. It's like, he just got it from the ground. The shit is easy to do if you know what you're doing. He kind of, you know, stated that too. It was like, I know what I'm doing. This is kind of how I did. I know about leverage and weight and magnets and all this shit. Mm-hmm. But it's a weird story because, you know, it's in Florida,
it seems proper that he moved to Florida, and sorry, Floridians, because he's a 26-year-old man that had his heart absolutely broken for the rest of his life by a 16-year-old
teenager. Yeah.
So right off the bat, this guy's, I mean, it was different times. I mean, yeah. I don't want to, whatever. People, obviously, society was definitely different all around the world in the early 1900s. But yeah, to be so heartbroken and the love of your life was a 16-year-old girl when you were 10 years older is pretty interesting. Right. And then your thought is, where are people like me? Where's my people? Florida.
Middle of nowhere, Florida.
South Florida, to be exact. Very south.
Yeah. And he, I guess, like, I was reading that he started building this thing, and apparently he built this like for her or like in her memory or.
Right. It seems to me like a monument to her or inspired by her to prove to her like his undying love or basically just to prove like, I'm not a nobody. It seems like it's a two for like, hey, look what you missed out on. I'm a super awesome badass, but also this is for you.
Yeah, which is kind of a great thing because I feel like these types of stories can go another way, which is tragic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's kind of interesting that he like built this thing for her, claims to have built it for her, you know, sort of an homage to her.
And her name is Agnes Scuffs.
Agnes Scuffs, beautiful name.
And I've seen it spelled S-C-U-F-F-S. But I've also, it says, it was something like S-K-U-V-T-S or something.
Yeah.
Supposedly the real spelling, but everyone says Scuffs and spells it Scuffs.
Yeah.
Very Americanized version.
Right.
Anyway, that's the 16-year-old love.
Yeah. And then another interesting thing is as he's building this thing, the zone, they're like kind of... what's the word, developing the city that he built this in? Like it was kind of middle of nowhere and then right. People started coming in. And so he took it and moved it to like Homestead, Florida, like outside of Homestead, Florida, which I guess is still sort of unincorporated territory.
Mm-hmm. It was 10 miles away. He moved whatever he had built already 10 miles away. Apparently, something on a trailer, like two beams in a trailer. And I think he got him towed by like a guy in a truck or something.
Right.
But still the whole thing is how is he live? He's, by the way, he's barely 5 feet tall.
Right.
And 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Soaking wet. So this guy's tiny and he's handling these massive stones and that's part of the mystery.
Adds to the guess. Yeah, so then he builds this huge thing and moves it all the way, you know, down the road. And then, works on it for until he's dead, right? Works on it like 20 some odd years.
28 years, I believe.
Yeah.
He started it in 1923 and finished it in 1951, and he died in 1951. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like one of those things where it's never done, right?
Right. Yeah. It's a man obsessed.
Right.
Heartbroken and obsessed in South Florida. And then he.
It's like the next Pitbull album.
then he charged people to like come into the place, but it sounded like it was really informal, kind of like you knocked on the door, you rang a bell and he would come down and for 25 cents he'd show you around the place.
Right. And there's a little hole in the wall where it's deposit your entrance fee, basically, you know, like put your money in this rock hole,
right?
and then I'll show you around.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. And I, from all accounts, he seemed like a pretty decent guy. He did, yeah, that's, and I almost want to rescind that because he did write some weird pamphlets that said some weird shit.
he did, and I didn't really know that about him. He does seem like he might suffer from like copriolia, like possibly I fucking do, because he seems like he's got some sternness and gruffness and vulgarity to him and some like weird possibly political leanings.
Yeah, which again Florida, you know, I feel like that time in America, you know, you have kind of these like, it's interesting. I think he wrote that like in one of the pamphlets. I don't think you can like read them, or I couldn't find them online.
You can buy them on site for sure. Like on the website, it says, it might say that they're exclusively sold.
I think I saw that too.
But they're definitely sold on site when you, Oh, it says on the website, these pamphlets are available only in our gift shop.
Only in our gift shop. Probably for a reason. I don't want to get out. But it says something like he said, you know, that like people who did, unemployed people shouldn't vote and weird shit. Right. Like that. And he wrote three of these pamphlets, right? And one of them was on how, apparently, allegedly, how he did this, how he built this. This thing, because he said his whole life that it's easy if you know how to do it, and I know how to do it, basically.
Right. He, if anyone would ask him, like how he did it, or he would just say he understood the laws of weight and leverage well, and that he also claimed, that he had discovered the secrets of the pyramids, which is intriguing.
Oh, so he's kind of saying both things?
Well, I think my interpretation of him saying he discovered the secrets of the pyramids is him saying they were man-made by hand, aliens and any sort of like supernatural powers of levitation, reverse magnetism, things like that. None of that applies to these great structures. If you know what you're doing, you can fucking do it, is basically what he's saying. I think. And his buddy, he actually did have a friend.
Was this the guy that moved the stuff too?
That I couldn't tell you. I mean, possibly. But his name... Oh, sorry. Man, I'm drinking a little bubbly, and I feel like I got a little burp going on. Sorry.
Okay.
I might let it fly. But there's this guy, Orville Irwin. It's a great fucking name. Mm-hmm. Who was a buddy of his. And he was a friend, also a contractor. And he has a knowledge of these techniques and construction techniques because he's a construction guy. And he actually wrote a book in 1996 about Coral Castle called Mr. Kant is Dead.
Oh yeah.
The story of the Coral Castle. I don't know what Mr. Kant, like cannot, Mr. Kant must be Ed's nickname or something. I don't really know.
Mr. Kant, or maybe it's like a motivational, maybe the tail end of it's a motivational book. Like if this guy can do it, you can do it.
If this guy can do it, you can fucking do anything. 5 foot nothing, 100 pounds, moving literal 1 ton plus stones all by himself.
Yeah.
But in this book, Irwin, I guess he has photographs, drawings, schematics, explains how it's all done. And he kind of, you know, shit on all the theories that everyone, all the sensationalized, whatever, you know, like he was using ley lines and just tapping into earth energy, or he was levitating. Like people, I think one of the Coast to Coast episodes, somebody had said they could like, they would like spy on him.
Right.
And people claim to have seen him, you know, hands over the stone, levitating it, just picking it up with the powers of levitation and shit, like moving it, stuff like that. You know, these rumors start going around that this guy he's not of maybe this world or whatever. And when man does any great thing, any great achievement, modern day theorists just like to throw aliens out there, especially if you're not a white culture. There's a lot of racism in that. It's just like, you know, like the Nazca lines and the pyramids all around the world. It's like all these non-Western, non-white cultures certainly couldn't do that by themselves. It must have been aliens, you know. And that's just like a trendy thing now. And this Latvian immigrant, 5 foot nothing, obviously couldn't do this by himself. So it could possibly be the aliens too. But this guy, Irwin, is saying like, no, he really did it. And he's kind of upset. And he's like, and this is a quote. He said, back in the days when Ed started carving out his original stones, his was a generation who knew accomplishments by the sweat of the brow. It wasn't mysticism, but hard work. This is how Ed really accomplished the massive project. And he took it as like a slight towards Ed's skills.
Which I don't know, which is fucking weird. I think that like, And correct me if I'm wrong, but if a drummer is accused, you know, records an album and is accused of it being a drum machine, are you not sort of stoked on that? You know,
you're a little flattered, right?
Right. Maybe. So there should be a little bit of like, hey, we actually did this. Like, you can say whatever you want, but we did do this. I think that's where it gets a little fishy for me, where it's like, why are you pissed about this? You know?
Yeah.
I sort of understand it to where it's like it discounts the sweat that they put into it.
Well, to Ed's credit, he never said any of this shit. When they asked him how he did it, he's just like, I understand the laws very well. Like, he basically said, I did it by myself. I know what I'm doing. And he wouldn't really elaborate. I think all the mysticism came from the outside, you know?
He was very secretive about it.
Probably journalists, people trying to sell papers.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes, man. People make shit up to sell things.
That's true. And now look at it. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah, it is what it is.
What they're doing.
He definitely benefited from it, and maybe he knew he was benefiting from it and just stayed quiet. It's like, if you want to think this place is a hotbed of paranormal activity, great. Give me your money.
Yeah, right.
Because he made a living off of it.
Yeah, and I guess they found, like, when he died, they found, like, was it $3,500, which back then is, like, kind of the equivalent of quite a bit of money.
Yeah, it's almost like 40 grand.
Yeah, that he stowed away.
For a little old man, a $3,500 bills they found.
Cute.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, he made his living giving tours and selling those pamphlets. And it seemed to be beneficial. But he, in his lifetime, to my knowledge, it was not called Coral Castle until after he was gone.
Yeah, it's kind of a corny name.
Yeah.
The original name was like Rockgate Park, right?
Yeah, Rockgate, I think, is what he called it. And then it was Rockgate Park. Because this is another thing, too. One of the discoveries, because one of his big things, one of his big achievements was a massive door that was balanced so perfectly. It was basically a rock slab revolving door. There's a little video of it. I'll try to post. It's like 9 seconds of just this door. It's like an 8.2 ton revolving 8 foot tall gate.
Yeah, rock. It's a rock.
Too. Right. And it was balanced so perfectly before it got a little aged that the wind would spin it.
Right.
And the whole thing was a child could go up to it and push it with its finger and it would rotate.
Yeah.
Right. But the lore was it was so well balanced and so perfectly placed. It's all rock. Cause it had like it has an archy frame. Like it's within a rock frame and this thing is just spinning. But when it kind of broke down, you know, eroded or corroded in this case, they had to fix it and they took it apart and he had bored out a hole from top to bottom and put a metal rod in it and laid the bottom on a truck bearing so it would spin.
Yeah.
And then the truck
bearing rusted, right?
Exactly. So once they saw that, this was, I think, in 1986, they discovered it. They're like, oh, so this guy's he's like engineering shit. He's got a brain to design these things.
Right. Took some mysticism out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is very well-crafted, mechanical-minded kind of engineering, but it was all hidden. Like, you obviously, when you look at the video, it's so flush,
right?
There, you can't see the metal rod.
Yeah,
you can't see the bearing. So what's funny is they just replaced it. They're like, oh, this is how it works. And then they replaced the bearing, and it didn't. They said it didn't work as well. It worked, right. But it was still, it took more effort to turn it after that. And it's, I think to this day, it works, but it's not as precise as it was when he had it.
It also looks like they put a gate around it.
Yeah, to protect it. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like Jim Morrison's grave, which I've been to. It's like this, I thought about that. It's like this little tiny headstone, but it's got a, like fences or little gates around it, so you can't get right up on it.
Yeah, it's the same with there's a cemetery in Macon, Georgia, that where the Allman Brothers wrote a song called "In Loving Memory of Elizabeth Reed," and that it's from this gravestone, and the gravestone is like totally gated off. And
no shit,
god damn it,
I didn't even know that. I don't know much about the Allman Brothers.
No, well, yeah, it's a similar situation where, you know, it's this tiny gravestone thing that you just kind of want to look at, but it's like surrounded by this big gate, probably because
people probably vandalized it.
Yeah, those darn teenagers.
That's the thing with rock star tombstones, is they're, yeah, they get fucked. I think Morrison's has been replaced. And there's many other ones that I don't really know, but I've just heard stories of, yeah, defacing, spray painting, people just do whatever they want. Yeah. Cause you know, fuck it. They're a rock star. They want you to
right.
To fuck their shit up.
Has Coral Castle ever been defaced? Probably
not that I've read. I mean, I'm sure because it's a public place, but I haven't read that anything's been like destroyed beyond repair or anything.
Yeah.
But could you imagine spray painting that rock?
No.
How the fuck are you going to clean that? It's so porous, you know?
Right. So speaking of which, what is the upkeep for Coral Castle? Like, are people just hanging out in there? Is there like,
well, it's privately owned now. And it has been since I think the 80s by the same company that turned it into what it is, like a tourist attraction. So I'm sure they got groundskeepers that just take care of that fucking place, maintain it, and just keep the money flowing.
Yeah.
Cause it's just a tourist attraction at this point. It's like a roadside monument or something, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how far off the beaten path it is, but is it, it's in Homestead, Florida, right? That's where it currently is.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's outside of Homestead, but that's like the nearest town. Cause from what I was reading, it's still whatever, it's like between these two places, and they're both have great names. Homestead and Leisure City, I think, is the other spot.
Right. Florida City. Oh, he moved from Florida City to Homestead, but yeah, Leisure City is something. It's something in
there. It's around there.
Fucking Florida, man. It's Leisure City.
I think it's still like technically unincorporated, which I don't even know what that means. But
it's funny. It's like I honestly don't know what that means either. Because when you roll into a town, it's like an unincorporated area or whatever. And you're like, I don't know what that means exactly.
Right.
But
the other thing that is interesting about this is I watched recently a documentary on Netflix called Tread. Have you seen that?
Oh, dude, is that about the guy who stole the tank?
Yeah, that like built, like reinforced a bulldozer and like destroyed this tank.
Oh, the bulldozer. That's it. Yeah, I did watch that.
It's wild. And the interesting thing I think about that is, or like the most interesting thing to me in that documentary was this like small town politics. And how this dude like kind of went off the edge because of these like weird small town politics, you know? And I think that like, you know, again, this is like what I kept thinking about this Coral Castle story is like this dude, obviously a little weird, you know, a little out there, maybe a little right leaning. But his energy was put into this, like, you know, if we're to like sort of not think about the supernatural elements to it, all of his energy, his entire life's work went into like building this thing for the memory of kind of a tragic memory. You know what I mean? It's like a weird thing that has like a sort of like positive connotation, but he wasn't necessarily like a positive guy. And he did all this mysterious shit so that like, for what kind of, you know what I mean? It's like a weird, I feel like there was like next to no agenda. And that's, I think that might be part of why I sort of am fascinated by it, because people don't do shit like this without, you know, without a motive, I guess. And like, what was his motive? Was it money? I mean, obviously he was getting a little bit of money, but like, was it altruistic? Did he actually do this for the memory of this girl? And like, what did that even happen? You know, or was that just a backstory for, so that he was like a weird architect? I don't know. It kind of like a little bit of it. I think that's where I'm like, is this all, you know, this guy, obviously, like, what do you separate the myth from reality? But like, what part of this is, I don't know. There's a little, I think the lack of human nature kind of is what I'm like, all right, were you put up to this? Did you actually have, you know, knowledge of like extraterrestrial, you know, architectural talent or, you know, are you right. Really a hard fucking worker? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, it's funny to entertain the idea that he could have, I mean, let's just say for S and G, you know, shits and giggles, Johnny, that he was contacted by an alien race, or was it in communique, which I don't even know if that's the correct usage of that word, but he built it to spec or was inspired by visions, or maybe he was abducted and they showed him what to do. And it was like a monolith. It was a landmark for them for when they come and land, and there's like, go to the fucking crazy coral castle. That's HQ for us. And they wipe his memory, and he's just, they're like, you don't know shit. You're just good at this stuff. And he's just, mom is the word, right? So he's just living his life, but he's not hermetic, you know. I don't think that's the right word. He's not a hermit, but because he had friends and he went into town, and you would enjoy this because he rode his bike 3.5 miles, right. And he was a cyclist like you are.
Yeah.
So he wasn't, you know, a recluse by any means. He was actually very social, and, you know, he gave his own tours and stuff. But it is interesting to think, if he were manipulated by outside forces in any way to do this and just keep it under wraps, that's very impressive. And or it really was a labor of love, and it was just, he was like obsessed. The only thing I can liken it to, and I don't know the full story behind this structure either, but is the Watchtowers, which is like a big artist project. And I'm not even going to try to say why it was started and how it was started, but I know it was just this guy that was just obsessed with building these structures, and he did it. And it's a huge thing. And it's very similar in that regard, where it's just this guy, this one person is obsessed with creating this one thing. So they just fucking do it by any means necessary. But the fact that Ed did all this in the cover of night, like even when he moved it to Homestead,
yeah, that's where
he did it all at night. All at night, no one could see what he was doing.
And it's like, why do the work out of sight to have it be a tourist, to only tell people that, like, yeah, did, like.
Well, think about it. He's either a fucking genius because he knew he had to keep things secret to keep the mystique about it.
Books about
it. yeah it is interesting. He is very open in saying like, yeah, I did it all by myself, but you'll never see me do it.
Yeah.
Which seems like a ruse, doesn't it?
Yeah. And
it's like he's bending spoons,
but he won't do it in public. It sounded like the people that were moving into the place that he was originally building it, like once there started to be too many people, he was
right.
I'm
going to be outed.
Not only do I want to do this work at night, I want to do this work at night with nobody else around.
Right. Yeah. That is the sketchiest part, is no one ever saw him do it. And he was very intentional about not being seen do it, but said, if you know what you're doing, you can do it. But hey, maybe he didn't want people to know, so no one else would do it. And he could kind of monopolize this thing he's got going on. Cause if another coral castle showed up, he'd be fucked financially. But you know, the undercover of night is it lays itself out perfectly for Hey, man, he was in cahoots with aliens. He was in cahoots with
mysterious.
Any secretive, God knows what's going on in Florida.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, not even to mention stonemasons, right? Not even talk about fucking masons.
And I think the plate, you know, it being in Florida, it being close to, you know, I don't know exactly the Bermuda Triangle or where that is.
Oh, it's down there.
Close enough.
It's just south of there.
close enough to that, I think. You know, I feel like there are certain places in the world that are just the weirder shit happens there. And I think Florida's a place where opportunity for weird shit. I mean, maybe that's, again, kind of what you were saying earlier. Is like, maybe he was like, man, I want to do this really weird fucking thing. Where can I go to do it? Oh, I'll go here. You know?
Yeah.
Like the idea prior to coming to, maybe he did the research. I have no idea.
That's the other thing too, is how there's no explanation that I have found is of how this Latvian guy in the early, I can't remember what year he came to America, 1910 or something. But how did he get the money? Why Florida? What was that trip like? Because apparently he lived in Canada too, in California and Texas. And he didn't move to Florida until 1918. That's what it was.
Oh, so he came to America and traveled around a bit?
He came to North America, yeah, before he settled in Florida. So, but, you know, where's this guy's money coming from?
Oh, and wasn't there a little bit of, didn't he get diagnosed with tuberculosis or something? And that's how he ended up in Florida? Because it was, like, good for his...
Actually, you're right. Yeah, but this is after he got to America. He got tuberculosis and he decided to move to a better climate to help his condition. I don't know if Florida is a better climate for anyone, honestly, like weather-wise, politically,
right.
Socially.
Right.
No, again, no offense, Floridians, but...
I think they're down with it. I think they
fucked
get
up
it.
Down there.
Yeah.
But, yeah... His whole story of moving to America is, I do want to know how that came about. How did he get the means to come to North America and just bounce around? Like, I understand he probably had a job. He probably had savings. He's probably just like, fuck this place. I'm heartbroken. I'm out. And that's just what it is. And he bopped around North America trying to figure out where to be.
Yeah. Or he had this idea that he wanted to, you know, I mean, that's another theory, is that maybe, you know, he's living in Latvia and he's like, man, I want to build a fucking oolite limestone structure. Where can I do that? And he's like, oh, I'll go to America. Goes to America. He travels around, ends up in Florida, decides he's going to pretend that he got his heart broken. No, I have no idea. I mean, obviously there's some, you could speculate on a bunch of stuff. The marriage thing, I don't know.
Right, that's pretty interesting. But if you're gonna make up a story like that, why are you gonna say you got your heart broken by a 16-year-old when you're 26?
Latvia in the early 20th century.
Look, man, I had my heart broken when I by a 16-year-old, but I was 16. Sure, I believe that. But the one thing is also, and of course, this being the time period that it was, the paper trail is not as obvious. Because he's got to be buying or excavating, or he's getting this oolite limestone from somewhere.
Right.
Where is it coming from? Who is supplying it? Who's transporting it? Why is it getting there? Why has no one ever seen this? All of this, these things are fucking
huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
I mean, literal tons.
Yeah.
They weigh tons. And like I said, every panel of the wall is 8 foot tall by 4 foot wide by 3 foot thick.
And no injuries. This guy didn't hurt himself.
No injuries.
It's like, How do you, and you're supposedly doing this at night with nobody else around, and you didn't break one finger, you know?
Yeah, because he was levitating them. It was touchless, man. He didn't touch this stone. He just moved it.
And there's, I started to pretend to think I could begin to understand reverse magnetism in my brief research on this. And I do not understand it. Sounds like it has something to do with the poles. And
right.
This guy was a big magnet guy.
Right.
And then there was.
Yeah, I think that's part of the levitation thing where things lift like a hovercraft or something, like lift off the ground. You know, because, yeah, it's basically just like levitating, getting off the ground by itself, like reversing the magnetism to the point where the thing floats.
Oh, okay. So
instead of it's like weighed down to the Earth's surface.
Is magnetism a theory or is it something that happens? Is that a truth?
Oh, well, I'm not even going to act like I know. But reverse magnetism, yeah, is a big part of trying to figure out UFO technology and how things travel with no sound and, you know, just get off the ground with no propellants, no propulsion systems, no gasoline or fuel of any kind or whatever.
So reverse magnetism is mentioned a lot in the extraterrestrial science world.
To my knowledge, and my knowledge is not deep, Johnny.
Okay, yeah, well, there might be a lot more listener homework to do.
I mean, I'm combining, there's, you know, because when you reverse engineer a UFO, there's like anti-gravity technology or anti-gravity theories and principles, and reverse magnetism, I think, is a part of all of that.
Okay.
But I don't understand, you know.
And
no, no shit.
Mr. Lee Skolnin or whatever, Ed, Eddie boy, he might have tapped into this.
Yeah, absolutely. And he could have special powers. Who knows? Because look, I'm gonna spit some of these facts out. These structures that he was using, they were obviously very fucking heavy, right?
Yeah.
So the average piece of stone that he was using, a single piece of stone, on average weighed 14 tons.
Dude.
And the largest stone weighed 27 tons. And the tallest, imagine this, the tallest, two of them standing at 25 feet tall. So he's erecting 25 foot, 27 ton, most likely, pieces of stone that, by the way, he carved as well.
Right.
Because, you know, there are all sorts of shapes that he did. I mean, he did, I'm going to list them off. He did a sundial, a polar telescope, an obelisk, a barbecue, a water well, a fountain, celestial stars and planets, and numerous pieces of furniture that were shaped in all sorts of whatever, 25 rocking chairs, a tub, beds, a throne, chairs resembling crescent moons. I saw that there's a lot of like crescent moon stuff going on. I don't know how he carved it. You know what I mean? I that rock, I assume oolite limestone. Limestone, I think, is, it's pretty porous, and I assume it's like kind of light in a sense, but yeah. You know, since they're so massive, they're obviously very heavy. But I think I'm going to assume it might be kind of easier to carve.
He carved them so precisely, though, that light wouldn't even go through them.
Right. Yeah. He put everything together without mortar.
Without mortar, and it still to this day stands on its own weight.
There's no light leaks or anything. It's so spot fucking on. Every rock that touches another rock, that is butted up against another rock, either side by side or on the top or on the bottom, is so perfect. There's no light leaks. It's no mortar. It's all held together perfectly.
Wild little
He
guy.
did it all by himself, this guy.
And then I have also seen the pictures of what he claims to have used, these little tripods, strange black box on the top. And it just does, I don't know. I think that's why it's difficult to believe. It's like this little guy with this little tripod erected, what did you say, 27 tons? It's just,
Right.
and then had to get that 20. It's not like it was lying there and he had to
That's
pick
the
it
thing.
up.
How the fuck? It wasn't obviously on his property because when he moved to Homestead, he bought 10 acres and he obviously moved everything. So he's not harvesting this shit from his property. It's coming from somewhere.
Yeah, a quarry. I don't know
Yes.
what a quarry, how quarry works, but
They just dig it up and take the rock away, the rock and dirt.
do you gotta explode it out of a quarry?
Oh
Like
yeah, there is explosions, heavy TNT usage in rock quarries. And I mean, I don't know how they get this oolite limestone. I don't know, honestly. I don't know. I don't know if it's something you got to dig deep for. I don't know if it's just on the surface and you got to blast it and break it up. I don't know if it's something that you can just fucking go and pick at it and fucking. I really don't know.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he's obviously getting massive. How the fuck are you going to transport 225 foot? And imagine if he carved these 25 foot slabs into
Right, they're bigger.
shapes. They're bigger when they're getting transported. No one sees this.
No one
No
sees it.
one sees 25 foot, almost 30 ton slabs of limestone being transported down the road and dropped off on this guy's property. And the thing is, when it's on his property, because there are pictures on the website of, like you said, like these kind of tripods and pulleys. And that's the thing, if you use proper leverage and you can use, there's pulley systems, sure, that you can develop to get these things up into the air and all that. But you to have the proper tools that aren't going to buckle under the weight and the rope
Yeah.
that's not going to snap, and you got to know exactly where to put that shit and use it yourself. And if you're using only your strength to manipulate whatever it is, a 25 fucking foot, 30 ton piece of stone, that is brilliance, absolute brilliance. And I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
And that's the mystery.
It's the strength of the memory of your 16-year-old love in Latvia.
Yeah, like I said, transporting it there is even a bigger mystery, because how the hell no one saw it. Even the person who transported it, no one who he's buying this off somebody.
Right.
No one's come forward to say anything. Like, no one cares
Right. I mean, the other thing could be that he did none of this, that it was like he was just a patsy kind of that they put on.
yeah.
It sounds like, I mean, that sounds, one of the books he wrote was called something like A Book in Every Home, or
Oh, yeah.
he, it's not like he didn't, like that's a pretty presumptuous name for a book that, for a guy who's super private. You know what I mean? Like, if you want, it sounds like he wanted some sort of something, he wanted people to look at him, or he wanted
Right.
this book in every home, or he had opinions, he had viewpoints. Maybe
Yeah,
somebody else
that,
did this.
yeah. Yeah, he obviously had ideas that he wanted people to hear. He wasn't trying to lay low.
Yeah.
In that book, this is the one of the quotes I got. He complained in the book, A Book in Every Home. He complained that the schools and the churches are cheapening the girls. They are arranging picnics, are coupling up the girls with the fresh boys, And then they send them out to the woods, parks, beaches, and other places so that they can practice in first degree lovemaking. This guy is sitting on his moral high horse talking about cheapening the girls when he was trying, he's heartbroken by not getting to marry his 16-year-old bride.
Yeah, classic. Class. This is a first generation Floridian, Florida man. This is like classic Florida man.
The OG Florida man. Just that vicious 5-foot fucking guy that you know you can't cross.
But like, obviously, you know, these books weren't edited. You know what I mean? Like, or he didn't like pass this off to somebody else. Somebody like greenlit this, you know, like the Coral Castle made this guy what he is. Otherwise he would be,
right.
I don't know. That's why maybe it wasn't him. Maybe he was left in the dark. And the only words he was given was like, hey, just tell him that you know what you're doing. You know?
Right. Look at this fucking pathetic, heartbroken loser. He's the perfect face to just sell this thing that we're doing. Just give him some money and tell him what to do, and he can write his silly little pamphlets and be a fucking local loser forever. And we'll just make him.
He's a perfect patsy.
Who he is. Exactly. Perfect patsy. Just somebody could be using him.
Yeah.
And it could be someone of this earth, or it could be someone not of this earth.
Yeah. I think, and that's why it's a little confusing. It's the dichotomy between not wanting to be seen yet sort of having this other like
right
side of like, hey, I do want to be seen. I mean,
yeah, listen to me and my thoughts. I want to be influential.
Right. Did he have a bed? Did he have a, speaking of bring it all back to beds, did he have a bed in this? He slept there, right?
Yeah, there was living quarters.
Was there a mattress in there? Did he sleep on the rock?
I'd assume he had a mattress, man. I mean, I don't know.
It's gotta be. I just with all that shit that he made, you it might be like I'm wondering if the living quarters are like they look like a room, but everything's made out of the stone.
I already mentioned he did make a bunch of furniture. Like
yeah.
there were tables, chairs, and beds and shit that he made out of the rock. So yeah, I mean, I imagine this baller ass bed frame that's one piece of rock that, you know, holds a mattress.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I have in my head. For whatever reason, a water bed sounds correct to be in there, but
salt water bed. Yeah.
Yeah, salt water bed.
Like, but it's like super. It's like you get water from the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
There's no mattress at all. It's just water, and you just float in it.
Float on it.
Wouldn't that be that'd be an interesting way to sleep, wouldn't it?
He's like the three precogs in Minority Report. He sleeps in the milky substance at night.
Yeah. Why not? This guy, we could mythologize this guy to death. I mean, he's got all the makings of you can go any way you want with this guy.
Yeah. And I mean, he might be more interesting posthumously than he was in his, you know what I mean? Like this guy might have been just a fucking, like you were saying, some heartbroken loser, but
right.
Because
terrible of thoughts, story. Terrible thoughts about women and people who shouldn't in voting rights.
He's a big generational sweat of the brow, this generation kind of guy.
Yeah, the unemployed and powerless should not have voting rights. This is the quote from him, actually, from the pamphlet. It is not sound to allow the weaklings to vote. Anyone who is too weak to make his own living is not strong enough to vote because their weak influence weakens the state.
Gee whiz.
That's what he said. This is this guy.
It's like I said, classic Florida man behavior.
You know, the more we talk about this guy, fuck this guy. He's got horrible ideas about society, and he's a pedophile.
Yeah.
He's a fucking pedophile. And luckily the 16-year-old girl was the smart one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like she's the fucking adult in the situation. I want to know what her life was like. They obviously, it didn't work. The Coral Castle, and that's part of the heartbreak, is, you know, that's the story. Is he did all this for her, and his lost love, his sweet 16 is what he would call her, which is kind of gross when you think about it.
Creepy, yeah.
Yeah. And she was like, yeah, whatever. Fuck you. I'm done. I'm done with you. She never came calling again. To my knowledge, she's never even seen it or never saw it before she passed, you know?
Yeah.
So he's just a heartbroken pedophile out there. Fucking.
In Florida.
Doing crazy shit in Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we got the Coral Castle out of it. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, hey, what structure, what great structure in this world wasn't built on the backs of either enslavement, servitude, or some creepy fucking weird person or just immoral rich person's idea. Right. You know what I mean?
And again, you know, that's kind of what I was saying earlier, was like, for this to have gone this way, you know, kind of the best outcome for everybody involved.
Right.
And we got this weird, cool structure. Mm-hmm. We have an odd myth and we have a canceled pedophiliac wedding. wins all around.
it's gonna live on forever as just one of those stories. And it, you know, as time goes on, and I can't wait. I mean, I can wait, but ever since COVID started, the first thing is like, oh man, I can't wait to hear what people say about how this all went down 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now. It's going to be like so far from the truth.
Right, right.
That it's going to be, it already is bonkers, right? Yeah. So this little story, honestly, we don't know the truth. He never said the truth. And all of these crazy paranormal ideas, to my knowledge, don't come from him at all, directly, right, or other. It's all made up stuff because people want to understand. And the further you get away from it, like we had our own theories tonight. We're just adding to the lexicon of craziness that revolves around this story, because we'll never know. And the fun part is just, hey, talk about it, because we'll never fucking know. This is like, strategize, theorize,
right?
we can say we know, we don't know.
Yeah, it'd be a mystery forever.
Yeah, and that's kind of a beautiful thing in a way.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And you know, it's
when you immortalize a fucking pedophile, that's a
and win. Luckily, I mean,
what the fuck is?
Luckily, he's not. You know, I feel like the picture that is painted of him, if he was a bad guy, he's still kind of, you know, still kind of a bad guy.
Right.
He hasn't, you know, other than the structure, which honestly, the more you think about it, maybe it wasn't him at all. Maybe he was just the patsy.
Maybe he was. Yeah. He was the heartbroken loser that couldn't get over his lost sweet 16. And some people saw how pathetic he was and gave him purpose in life.
Yeah.
By saying, hey, you be the face of this fucking mysterious thing we're going to do and make money off of. And we'll give you, basically he's working for tips.
Yeah. Well, was it always half finished? Is that the deal? Like people were just kind of coming in and being like, oh, this is fucking weird. Here's 25 cents.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like, yeah, like I said, it seems to me it was always a work in progress, but open to the public to like, hey, you want to come check it out?
You know what I wonder?
I'll show you what I've done.
I wonder if initially people started coming up to his door and he was like, fuck you. And then it eventually was like, you know what? I'll make some money off this, you know?
Right.
Like maybe he really wanted to be left alone. People kind of wouldn't leave him alone. So money kind of sweetened the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be like he realized, oh shit, I can make money off this. I'm gonna do that.
Yeah.
But you'd have to imagine that he knew he could make money, but the lore is he's so blind with love that stuff like that doesn't matter. He just wanted to do this for her.
Yeah, I just don't buy that. I just don't buy it.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, this guy has a fourth grade education.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, he by any means on paper not a smart guy, but obviously very smart, unless what we're saying is true, in which if what we're saying is he's a patsy, is he's fucking dumb, who knows? Who
Yeah.
knows? Who knows? But this is the Florida Stonehenge he built.
Yeah.
This is what he did. This is what he. This is his contribution to the American to American culture and lore, and why people. I'm sure Latvian tourists are just flooding Homestead, Florida.
Yeah, really put that place on the map. I think I told somebody once, I was talking to somebody at the bar, and they had a Florida ID, and I was like, "Oh, I've always wanted to check out Homestead." And they were like, "Why would you ever want?" Just like they were shocked that I would even want to go near that place. And I was like, "The Coral Castle." And they're like, "Dude, it don't go to Homestead, Florida." I was like, "Okay."
I have a feeling it's going to be, because I've been to the Alamo, and I have a feeling Coral Castle is going to be cooler than the Alamo. But when I went to the Alamo, I was underwhelmed. I was more impressed with the cats of the Alamo, that there are a literal, like there's postcards about the cats of the Alamo. Like there are cats that live on the grounds and it's generations deep.
What?
Yeah. That was more exciting to me than the actual Alamo. I was like, okay, this is historical. This is interesting. This place is fucking tiny, and you milk it for all it's worth
Yeah.
because it's larger than life. But when you get there, you're like, oh, cool. Then, I feel like Coral Castle, like I said earlier, it's probably really small, but I'd be more blown away because there's more to look at there. I'd be like, oh shit, this is fucking crazy. But it's probably just like even though it's on a 10-acre plot of land, it's, I imagine it's not that, it's not 10 acres. I mean,
Right.
it's just going to be like maybe a small section of the property, but very impressive section of the property. I do want to check it out. It is one of those bucket list things, and probably only the only reason I'll ever go back to Florida.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of those things where it's like in America, how many of these kinds of sort of supernaturally monolithic megalithic structures are there, in at least America.
Right. There's only a
So,
few. There's
yeah.
only a few like that are, like I said, watchtowers is one of them, where it's totally man-made, crazy. Doesn't matter what's built around it, it's not going anywhere because it's like a historical. I think this place is like a actually registered historical place now.
It's called Watchtowers.
Watts, like out in LA, Watts,
Okay.
California, Watts. Yeah, look that up. It's similar in nature, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Coral Castle itself, they liken it in terms of achievement to the Taj Mahal, because the Taj Mahal was built for the guy who built it. It was a love story as well.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, Florida's Taj Mahal, because yeah,
Wow.
the Taj Mahal was built over 20 years, and it was
Okay.
a monument to the wife of the king. But that was built by, thousands of slaves,
Right.
and Coral Castle was one guy over 28 years or whatever. But So Ed died, obviously, in December of 1951. And this is kind of a cutesy story of death.
Yeah.
He put a sign on the door of the castle saying, "Going to the hospital." It's so weird laughing at people dying, but that's what it is. But he took a bus to Miami to the hospital, and he died three days later in his sleep, and he was 64 years old. And then the castle went to his next of kin, which is like a nephew living in Michigan.
Yeah.
And then I guess that nephew sold it to a comp, or
it changed hands a couple times.
That's only, it surprisingly has only changed hands like twice.
Okay.
Something like that. Like his nephew had it, and then he sold it to a family from Illinois. And then they sold it, I think, to the company that currently owns it in the 80s or something, I think. So it's seriously only, it's baffling, honestly, that it's only changed hands like two or three times.
Do you think the nephew in Michigan or wherever knew about
the Coral about Castle? Him at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought about that.
Like, hey, you've inherited this fucking huge thing.
Down. Yeah, it's like an 80s movie. That's like a perfect 80s movie where like you got this loser, like teenage or college age kid that's just down on his luck, and then all of a sudden his rich great uncle dies, and he's like,
right.
You own a fucking mansion, and and then hilarity ensues.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how long he had it for. He was the one who found the money too, right?
Yeah, I don't think it was very. I seriously think he only had it for a couple years. I think Ed died in 51, and his nephew sold it in 53. But yeah, right before his death, or right before he sold it, during the switch of ownership, yeah, they found a box of Ed's stuff that says. It contained a set of instructions that led to the discovery of the $3,500, which was his life savings. Yeah.
There's $3,500 bills.
Right. So that happened. Yeah. I wonder if the nephew kept it.
I would imagine he,
or he had to give it up because he just sold it. Cause it was during the sale apparently, and they found it.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Like during like those greedy fucks are like, yeah, we'll take that.
Because yeah, like $3,500 was
still a lot of money,
but it was like 40, or was it 40 grand then, or was it 40 grand in when he like started like 20 years earlier?
I think it was around 40 grand about the time he died in the 50s.
Dude, what a score. So you're in the middle of selling this, I imagine, white elephant. I couldn't imagine getting that and being like, oh sweet, you know. You're like, oh shit, I'm gonna have to unload this for sure.
Right.
And then you find $3,500. So that's a score.
That's a huge score. If I were the nephew, I'd be like, I'd just pocket it. $3,500 bills, I'd fold that right up and be like, yep. And so you can disperse that. I can slowly spend that.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
And yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, man. But that's Coral Castle. Is there anything else about it you wanted to bring up?
I don't think so, man. I think we covered it all and more.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we cracked it, man. I think we figured out basically, essentially, stop celebrating this guy. Just celebrate his achievement.
I will say my opinion of this person greatly declined over the course of this episode. So I'm glad we got that figured out.
It's funny because I've known his story for years, but when you actually say it out loud,
right,
you're like, wait a minute, why the fuck do I care about a guy like this? this guy is so charming. He doesn't sound like a charming guy.
Yeah, sounds like an angry little man.
why? This country is you know, obviously founded by terrible people and everything.
And that's the thing. I think that's what makes this
everything about this place,
this story. So it's a very American tale, you know. It's not, it doesn't right. come from well, a place of like, you know, goodness and altruism. It comes from a place of there's some like dark secrets in the Coral Castle. There's some dark, some skeletons in the closets of the Coral Castle.
Right. Yeah. Well, if you have to choose the method in which Ed built this, of all of the craziness, of all the practical theories, of everything that he says, that he's just, I know what I'm doing. What do you believe? What's your final, your conclusion on how the Coral Castle was erected?
You know, I had a couple of theories coming into this, but I think I've really landed on, I think the thing that makes the most sense, especially since it was real secretive, but this dude doesn't seem to be a secretive guy necessarily. I think he was just the scapegoat. I think this was done by somebody else, maybe with knowledge that they shared with, you know, this fella. But I think it's all a ruse, and I think that this guy, you know, maybe didn't do any of it. I think he was just, he just maybe wanted to put a book in every home and
mm-hmm.
wanted this girl to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll let you sell your little books if you do our thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because it is, I want to believe that he knew exactly what he was doing, thusly creating the thing that he created by himself. But he obviously did not act alone, because like I said, it's, these things need to be transported. So I want to know, what's the fucking trail of the transport and purchasing of these fucking massive rocks?
Right.
How did he acquire all of this stuff? What was the system in place for that? Who's his connection? How did he get the money? How did it get there? What the fuck? When it got there, I believe he could have carved it all by himself and erected it all by himself. Maybe. The 25 footers, I'm having a hard time believing he did by himself. But then again, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is like, it's not impossible. And that's why I think there's a lot of speculation about this, because it's like, well, maybe, you know.
Maybe. And he said it straight up. I did it. If you right. know what you're doing, you can do it. And I believe that. But then again, no one to my knowledge, because like I know with certain, like the Nazca lines and other pyramids and everything, people try to recreate. They try to use the methodology in which right. people claim to have used to recreate the thing exactly like they said it was created. I don't know if anyone's ever done that with Coral Castle. Has anyone ever tried to replicate this in the way that Ed says he did it? Because I would love to see the document, like a documentary on that, like a motherfucker right. out there trying to just, you know, get all this done and in the way that he says it was done. Is it possible?
Is it possible? Can you? And I mean, you'd have to start from the quarrying of the stone.
Everything. Yeah. You'd have to, how the fuck, what is the process that he would have to have gone through in that time? I mean, you have to go back and see what was accessible, what was available, and how these things were taken from the earth and transported to his property.
Yeah.
How, you know, like we could do it by any sorts of means today, but back in those days, the 20s, 30s, 40s, how could it have happened and recreate that?
Right. And even the more suspicious thing to me is the motive, you know. What was going on? It was a 16-year-old girl in Latvia. That's why you're building this shit. Like, what is the motive?
Has anyone talked to her ever? Has anyone found her to talk to her?
This is like one of those weird things where like also, I'm sure people have thought about this and then they just kind of stop thinking about it. You know what I mean?
People just want a good story. And they're like, oh,
yeah,
we're trying to just ruin this for everyone, Johnny. It's like, let's get down to reality here. Who the fuck is this guy? What did he do? How did he do it? Fuck it. Like, it's an amazing achievement, obviously. But this love story is kind of gross. Let's stop talking about that.
Yeah, and yeah, like, God damn it.
And let's figure out how he did it. Because if he did it by himself, honestly, with a fourth grade education, very, very, very impressive.
Yeah, pretty incredible.
But if he also was just the face of a operation that was a weird millionaire underground operation trying to create a tourist attraction and get people to Florida, like also the Fountain of Youth, you know, same thing.
Yeah. Or the, you know, maybe this is an extraterrestrial HQ and
could be, man, you know,
yeah, I'd be kind of disappointing all the places, you know,
right.
Kind of a disappointing place for to end up. Like, fuck.
Yeah. They're like, oh, can you imagine? I've heard so many good things about Earth.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. What the fuck? Homestead, Florida.
Be very disappointing. Pretty incredible feat. Be disappointing if it were like any bigger deal than it currently is, you know?
I'm sure they have only the biggest Piggly Wiggly in Florida. Do they have Piggly Wigglies that far south? They probably do. Publix. Sure. They got Publix. It's all Publix down there. Yeah. Anyway. All right. I think that's it, man. I think that's it. So I'm going to do the exhumed excerpts from the Tomb of the Promulgated. If you got a second, it's a quick one.
Let's do it.
You like sports, right? Like you're a sports guy.
I do.
And this is a very short one, but I thought this was really interesting because whatever, it's funny. I just kind of came across it. It's from this is an old one, 19 oh gosh. What is it? Man, I don't know when the fuck. Oh, this is from 1964. This APRO bulletin that I pulled this from, but it's a story of a baseball star, Darrell Evans. You ever heard of this guy?
No.
Long time. He played for like 20 years. I never heard of the guy either. So this is the quick little blurb here. Citing Sparks baseball star, and Sparks is in quotations. Darrell Evans was one of the Giants' hottest hitters in their 1982 stretch drive. And his, oh, this is not from 1964. Did I say 64?
Yeah.
No, I meant 84. I'm pretty sure this is 84. So yeah, Darrell Evans was one of the Giants' hottest hitters in their 1982 stretch drive. And his 30 homer season in 1983 led to a rich free agent contract with the Detroit Tigers. Evan said that his rejuvenation started with a UFO sighting at his Pleasanton, California home in 1982.
Wow.
Yeah, right. He and his wife, LaDonna, were sitting on the back porch that summer night when they suddenly saw an object 30 feet wide, triangular in shape, with no wings. It's just a big fucking triangle in the sky. That is just wild. It had green and red lights on each side and white lights in back. The couple watched the silent object about 100 yards away for about a minute to a minute and a half. Evans went to get his camera, but as soon as I got up, it sort of tilted, he said. By the time he returned with his camera, the object was out of range. Then it was gone. Evans said the experience definitely helped my career. It gave me something to think about besides myself. It sparked things for me. And that's the story. So I looked up Darrell Evans's stats.
30 homers in a season. That's not bad.
So, okay. He says that he was rejuvenated by this UFO sighting, right?
Uh-huh.
And I think it's true. So this guy started playing in 1969. And he didn't stop playing until 1989. Like, this guy played for fucking ever.
Dude, baseball, what's the average career span?
Oh, God. I don't know. I think it's a position thing. Like, certain people, especially pitchers, lefties, especially relievers and stuff, they'll go into their fucking 40s. If you're a position player and you're fucking grinding, then, yeah, I'd say, I don't know, 12, 15 years maybe?
Okay.
Or less. But some of these guys, yeah. But this guy, I don't know exactly what position he played, but he wasn't a pitcher. I know that much. He did win one home run title. He hit 40 home runs in 1985.
Yeah.
3 years after the signing, right? So this is based on his stats, right? From 1969 to 1982, he's very consistent. He's a very consistent player.
What did he play?
What position?
Yeah.
I'm trying to, let me look. Hold on. Hear the click. You hear the click of the computer. He played, Jesus Christ. Let me come back to it because I it's so funny when you look someone up, you think the first thing that'll come up is their fucking position. So I guess he was a third baseman, and then he was a first and third baseman. He played the infield.
Okay.
So he lifetime, not a great hitter. I think his lifetime average is like 2.248 or something. Like, he's under subpar 300 hitter. And he's pretty consistent with that. But he had like early flat, like third, he would have like a bunch of homers. They had a 41 homer year.
Damn.
In the 70s, you know, in 73. But that wasn't the year he won the home run title. He won the home run title in 1985 after he saw the UFO. So, yeah, he's kind of up and down with his career. He's like basically in his, God, like 13th or 14th year when he sees the UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And he's 1980 was a decent year, 79, decent, like kind of decent, 81, not so hot, 82 really wasn't that hot. And then boom, 1983, he's like back, like his numbers jump up again, 84, all right. And then boom, 85, he's like super hot. And then like for the next couple of years, he's like hot shit. Like, he's back. Like, the UFO, he was like in a 2-3 year slump until he saw the UFO.
Wow.
And then he got more consistent. He got a little more consistent after he fucking saw the UFO. So did they give him some juice? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's really interesting. So there's a lot to be discussed.
And it's a triangle. It'd be crazy if it was a diamond, right? If you saw a diamond-shaped UFO, like a baseball diamond. But, you know, he's a triangle, and he plays like first, third. He probably played some second. Why not? That's a triangle.
Yeah.
You got to think there's some significance to the shape.
So he gets a little juice.
Triple crown?
Did he think maybe he's got less to, you know, kind of opens your worldview up when you see something like that?
Maybe he got him. That's what he says. It got him out of his head, kind of.
Yeah, loosened him up a little bit.
So let that be a lesson to all you professional sports ball players out there. And I know a lot of you are listening. A lot of you. See a UFO when you're in a slump. Actively look.
That's good advice. Keep looking up. Look to the sky.
Keep looking up. They'll give you the juice.
That's right. That's interesting. There's a my buddy was telling me during the there's a video of Chris Brown during a celebrity basketball dunk contest or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
You can he goes up with the ball and you can see his like fingers stretch out like it's like he forgot that he was still on this planet or something. And then I don't know if he misses that. I haven't seen the video. My buddy was just telling me about it. He reminded me of it. like misses the dunk or gets the dunk or something, and then like hides his hand like he hurt it, as though he might be like, I don't know, shape shifting or something. But it reminded me of the second episode of X-Files, that dude that could squeeze his fucking fingers in through the vents and stuff. There could be a lot of weird stuff.
Could be. You talk about Chris Brown, that woman beating piece of shit.
Yes.
Asshole.
The shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck that guy. Every time somebody comes out with a song with that guy, I'm like, get rid of this guy. He's a huge piece of shit. Fuck Chris Brown. But his brother was a professional basketball player, right? Like, I think it's his brother. He played for the Lakers. That motherfucker, oh my God, could that guy jump? He can jump so fucking high.
No shit.
So I'd imagine his brother is very similar in basketball skills.
Yeah.
Or at least athletic ability.
I wonder if there's more. I'll have to look on it. You'll have to invite me back at some point. Maybe we could just talk
sports.
Extraterrestrials in sports. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would love that. Absolutely. Let's do it. Let's have you back. Let's say next week. We'll just do it next week.
Perfect.
But I honestly, I believe it. In some cases, I mean, there could be some teen wolves out there, right, Johnny?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't have to be all alien.
I'm keeping my eye out for it. Next draft.
Look at their eyes.
Yeah.
They're blinking sideways. You know what I mean? Cool. Well, dude, that was super fun. Thanks for being here. What do you got going on? What's going on with Coffin Apartment? What's going on with music?
Coffin Apartment's going really well. We just moved out of that fucking the Toad House
spot. Oh, the practice space? You guys aren't there anymore? You're not across from us, technically?
No, Aunt texted me yesterday and was like, am I hearing you guys out there? I was like, no, we're out of there. But we were all in there me and Brody were in various rooms in that space for a decade, you know?
Oh, yeah. But you guys got shows coming up? Like, yeah, we want to tell the people about anything coming up?
Yeah, we got a show coming up on March 12th with Folion at the Six, which is like what used to be the liquor store underneath what used to be the liquor store. I think it's called the Midnight Society now.
Is that on Belmont in Portland?
Yeah, Belmont and like
Southeast Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Southeast Belmont and 34th ish.
Mm-hmm.
Just me and, or just us and Foley and two bands. You got no excuse. Come out.
People got a lot of excuses now. I haven't been to a show in 2 years.
Damn.
Not one.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Should be a good time. I'm really into this two band bill thing.
Isn't it great? Better than five.
Bump it up. If we could bump up, if the two band bill could happen at like 3 PM, you know, that'd be great. I say bring back matinee shows, two band bills. I want to see more of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like eating, right? You can eat three fat meals a day, or you can eat like five little meals a day. And apparently five little meals a day is just better for you.
Yeah. And it's far
healthier.
Digest.
You imagine seeing five micro shows a day? That'd be great.
Be perfect. And you don't get tired of it. It's not, you know, I like the idea of after a show, this is gonna make me sound like the oldest person ever, after a show being able to go home, have some dinner, have a night, you know,
right,
rather than going home at 3 a.m. and
grabbing a shitty burrito.
Yeah, exactly.
Passing out.
See, we have problems too. It's not, I know the audience also has, you know, their issues, but I say we bring up show times earlier, two band bills. Sorry, I didn't mean to make this a pulpit for my
no, but that's what big venues do. I mean, bars, you're going up until curfew. I mean, you're going up 1-2 a.m. depending on where the place is, but big venues, I mean, they're out of there by what, 11 midnight at the latest. Like, you know, they're not keeping motherfuckers out. And they got the clout to be making noise until 3 a.m. if they really wanted to, but they don't, because it makes more sense to get people out of there early. And, you know, people will stick around for the last band if the last band's not going on at 1:30. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true.
But that's just the culture. That's just the way it is. And I'm sure, like with comedy, I hear comedians talking about the crazy hours. I mean, they're going on 3-4 in the morning. Oh, and no, like, dude, that's fucking nuts. Who's out
and that's, that time? That's a much harder.
That's a thing.
I've always maintained that comedy, stand-up comedy, has got to be one of the difficult forms of art to go, to have to do. Like, I just have to get up. If I had to play at 1 in the morning, I just have to get up there and ostensibly give everybody the middle finger and play really loud music.
Right.
But as a comedian, you got to get up, you got to fucking make people laugh. Like, that's the whole goal. You have to make people laugh. You have to, like, interact with the audience.
Who are you making laugh at 3 in the morning? Who are those people?
I don't know. I think they'd already be laughing, though, you know?
Right. Like, what's their fucking humor? And do you even care if you make them laugh? Like, you want to make them laugh, but who are these fucking people?
Yeah.
It's a comedian. I don't know. I don't know. It obviously is a thing, because that's how comedians, they cut their teeth.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, but it's also in, you know, like New York City, LA, things where that culture thrives, you know, in Portland and other areas, we're not grinding that late.
Nope. We're ready to be in bed by 10 o'clock.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, you wake up for 6 hours the next day and then you take a nap.
Exactly.
You take a little nap.
Take a nap in your bed that isn't on the ground anymore.
That's right. You got a bed off of the ground. Very crucial. Perfect nap scenario. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, Johnny. I think that's it, dude. I think we did it. Fucking great having you. Thank you so much. And let's do it again. And hopefully I see you sooner than later.
Hell yeah. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
No worries, dude. We'll do it again soon.
All right, brother.
All right. Later.
Later, man.
Okay. There it is. There it was. What do you think of Ed? What do you think of Ed, the man? And what do you think of his accomplishments here? I mean, how do you think he did it? We broke down our thoughts on what we think of him. And how we think he might have pulled it off. But what do you think? I would love to hear from you. Like I said at the top of the show, lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com or at lostrhetoricpodcast on Instagram or lost_rhetoric on Twitter. I want to hear your thoughts. I really do. So hit me up. As promised, I am going to play a little bit of a Coffin Apartment song. This is a song called Transient Exuberance off of their excellent record, Full Torso Apparition. I'm holding the copy of the vinyl right now. It was out on Silver Stature Sounds. They have a release before this record came out. And they also have a split with Heavy Medical, who, you know, if you're really paying attention, you know Dave Angelini, who's been on the show a few times. That's his band. And that split didn't come, it came out not that long ago. So definitely check them out. I'm going to post a link to their Bandcamp. But here we go. Here's some of Transient Exuberance by Coffin Apartment. We'll be right back. Excellent, excellent record, excellent song. Love those dudes. That's Johnny Brook on guitar, and he was the first vocalist you hear in that song. But yeah, Johnny, Justin, Brody, all good dudes. Such a good band from Portland, Oregon. If they ever come to your town, do yourself a favor and check them out. They're a real fun live show as well. I hope you enjoyed this week. And I know I did. So please contact me with any thoughts, ideas, you know, suggestions. Who gives a shit? Just say something. And also, again, rate, review, just follow, subscribe, do all of that stuff. Let people know, you know. It helps. It helps a lot. And I trust you to say good things about the show. I trust you to your friends. Just say good things to your friends and strangers, mostly strangers. Yell at strangers about the show. Okay, thank you, everyone. I love you. I will see you next time. And that's it. Stay sane and stay safe, everybody.